Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to our cooking version of Scatter Chatter. This is your boy, Just Ray. Today, we've got a special guest, the awesome Chef Jean-Marie. Hello, Chef Jean-Marie. How are you doing today?
I am great. Hello.
Can you tell our audience, like, who you are and what you have done? Maybe, like, go through a short list of your resume so before we get into the phone call and the chat.
I started in the Caribbean, lived there until I was about 11, moved to France as a teenager, and then didn't get a chance to go to culinary school there, but got a lot of influence from the French. Moved to New York when I was a teenager. Went to culinary school, CIA, Culinary Institute of America, in Hyde Park, New York, and then I worked in New York City with cool people, you know,
mm-hmm.
and eventually worked at the Open, one of the first W Hotel there, then moved around,
okay.
Eventually moved to L.A. and made my way out to Los Angeles in 2002, so I've been here since then.
All right. With all your extensive knowledge, have you ever got to teach?
To teach? Yeah, I've been teaching in LA since 2002 until about last year, so almost 19 years.
Okay. Well, are you familiar with in North Hollywood?
Yeah, I worked there for 6 years.
Last
year, in March.
Oh, no. How are your feelings about that? What are your feelings towards that as an instructor?
The feelings about the fact that it closed?
Yeah, the closing, yeah. Or during the time of the closing. Like, did you know, ahead of time or...
an industry-wide issue. It wasn't the only location that closed. I mean, nationwide, there was a number of schools that closed. So the cooking school industry is very, very interesting because it doesn't work properly with the economy. So it wasn't a surprise.
So when you say that it doesn't work with the economy, like, what do you mean? Like, as far as, like, the attrition rate or how you go into instruction expecting a job coming out, like, where do you see the failure point is?
Back in 2008, when there was some big loans problem and mortgage issues in the U.S., and the economy was down, and it was terrible, actually. The culinary school were doing great. And student population was up. So somewhere between poor economy, that pushes people to go back to school. So cooking is one of the easy way out to get a two-year certificate, a non-degree, where you can get back and get a job without honestly working too hard and making some money right away. So... but then when the economy was back up in 2011 and 12, the numbers started to drop. We're losing students right and left, and the economy was great. So somehow when the economy is great, students are able to have one, two jobs, and they have access to cash, and they don't need education that much anymore. So that's what I mean by there's an inverse reaction to the economy and culinary school.
Oh, okay. All right. So when you were giving instruction to your students, like what did you like see as far as like a common trend as far as like learning or like transferring over to a job? Like, was it an easy transition for them, or was it just straight up academia without, you know, actual working experience? Or was there a little, what was the thing like in between that, if there was something?
Most students could transition between going to school and getting a job. And,
okay.
In school itself, there's a good mixture of theory versus practice. They get to cook a lot, so they have the practice.
Okay. Do you think the same could go for like a certification program as opposed to a 4-year degree in culinary, or do you just, is that even necessary anymore? Like a 2-year program?
That's a loaded question. I don't know. There is a certification program with ACF, and that's probably a different question, a separate question.
Okay.
What was your other follow-up question?
Well, I mean, like, do you think that, say, a kid, like, he's like, I don't really know what I want to do right now, so I just want to work. Is it better for him to go through the certification program or go through, like, a 4-year degree? I mean, unless he wants to go into management, or is that even necessary to go into management? Is it more about skill?
It's both. When
okay.
you go to an employer, they're looking for practical skills.
Okay.
If you're going to be a chef, can you cook? If you're going to be a manager, can you use a computer? So are you good with, like, Word, Excel, you know, all different programs that allows you to manage, control, order food, sanitation practices, and all those types of things. So it's not one or the other thing. It's both. You can't be like a 100% manager and know nothing about food and vice versa. So a 4-year degree is the basis. And then you could say, I want to move to do other things to advance or specialize. Certification, as you mentioned, Paul, is completely separate, because you can't certify if you don't have a degree. Because the question is, what are you certifying?
What do you?
So
I
eventually,
guess, like,
when you have a degree and experience, then you could certify in various levels.
Oh. Okay, that makes sense. So speaking from personal experience, like, at one point in time, I've done the interviews at different culinary institutions, and they have you do the, I guess you have, what is it, the, I forget what it's called. I don't know if it's a stage or what you, when you cook for the chef in order to get the job. Like, have you had to do those sort of things? And if so, like, what are the tips you would give to somebody that's looking for a job when they go into those things? Like, if you have to cook, I forget what it is. I don't know if it's a trial or whatever, but that's part of the interviewing process. Like, what are your tips you would give to somebody so they can, like, be successful in that, in the interview, when they have to do that?
Don't volunteer information that they don't ask you. I mean, just tell, answer questions as frank and honest and genuinely as possible. And don't be long-winded. Otherwise, you're going to come across as
okay.
someone who knows too much. And that could be intimidating for some.
Well, what about the cooking? Because I know, like, I forget what it's called. I wish I knew the name for it. Like, they have you do that part. That's common knowledge, the resume and interview and talking part, but the cooking part, like, how do you impress your chef to, like, get the job? Like, if you want to, like, land the actual position.
If they ask you to cook as part of your recruiting or hiring process, they will have detailed.
It's a plating.
Recipes or a platform that will allow you to do that. So, a space, a time, an oven, a place to clean, a certain amount of ingredients, and where to put your stuff, and when to clean up, all that kind of stuff. And once you present A couple of dishes I had to do years ago. One place asked me to make an omelet. And as silly as it sounds, it really requires you to be it shows dexterity. You can manage, you know, how to fold an egg. You could easily mess it up by overcooking it. You could fold it the wrong way. You could season it, which is a no-no. There's so many little things that a basic cook would know, and if you didn't, they would just know that you're not up to par with simple tasks.
Okay. And what about if you have to, like, freestyle it? Like, they just say, cook me something just to see if you can cook. What should you do to, like, impress them?
Freestyle? I've had to freestyle before. I think you should always go back to the basics and show, you know, freshness, clean cuts, simple techniques, and using a varied ingredients, so you look like you know seasonality and ingredients, things like that.
Okay. All right. So now, I mean, we kind of got into the, like, the business side and, like, being working. So how do you feel things are, like, now with COVID? Have things, like, really changed for you? Or is there any, like, major difference, like, besides, like, having to wear, like, you know, safety equipment? Like, what do you feel is the difference now? Is it harder? Is it easier? Is it what, like, what is your take on it?
I'm not sure what the question is. Sorry.
Well, I mean, no problem. So, like, as far as, like, working during COVID, like, is it a little bit harder now working, like, you know, working in a kitchen? Is it more demanding? Like, what are your thoughts on it? And what are, like, common practices that you have seen or not seeing during, you know, working during COVID?
Oh, yeah. I mean, absolutely. It's so much harder to be tactile with an ingredient that requires an ingredient like food that requires you to do more than look at it. You have to taste it and measure it and taste it again and correct the seasoning by most standard recipes to make sure you're approaching the way you season the food so it's presentable and it tastes good when it's done. But, you know, with COVID, you have your gloves on, hopefully you have your mask on, so you can't taste the food with the mask on, so you're going to have to take your mask off. You can't put your finger in it, so you need to have some, right? You need to have a certain degree of, well, you couldn't put your finger in it before, but the point is now you have to be that much more careful of approaching that food because you're going to have to taste your mask about two or three times just to take that one piece of food just to make sure it tastes good. So you do have to take extra precautions for the same recipes.
So now, I mean, they've just shut down, like, restaurants again, I think, in L.A. So what was it looking like prior to, like, the shutdown as far as, like, spacing, being outdoors or indoors? What have you seen, like, as far as, like, the trend, and what would you recommend for diners when they come into those type of restaurants?
Well, right now people shouldn't be going to restaurants because the governor shut it down, period. But if they were to go in restaurants, they should be so careful as to stay at their table, not go to other table or friends or people they know and chat with them. You know, whatever the rule is, 6 foot and six people per table and those type of things, they should follow that by, like, a religion. But I think they should just stay home, to be honest with you.
Okay. Just stay at home. Okay, so with the staying at home thing, like, as far as, like, staples for somebody at home, like, what would you recommend? Like, I mean, because, you know, I've been out there, I'm pretty sure you've been out grocery shopping, Like, what are some, like, common staples you would recommend people, like, grab on their shelves, or uncommon staples, rather? What would you recommend people, like, grab and keep in their pantry? So they don't have to just keep making a bunch of trips and stuff.
I would say probably some really good carbs, carbohydrates,
uh-huh.
and some non-animal protein, like grains, like
okay.
beans, chickpeas, lentils, flax seeds, canned foods. People kind of are shy about canned food. I would get like sardines, I get anchovies, I would get, I wouldn't get them in oil, I would get them in water. I would get nuts, legumes, nut butters, seeds, spices, you know, things to make your food taste good. Just because you're home doesn't mean your food needs to be bland. So, yeah.
Right. So you're just like just cooking food for the heck of it, and you're just like, ugh, what am I eating?
What? Yeah, I would get almonds, almond flours, flax seeds, those type of things.
Okay. And what about the oils? Like, there's this thing about, like, oils going rancid and blah, 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 blah. Like, is there a recommended type of oil that you would recommend people keeping on their shelves, like, during these times for long, extended periods of time?
Oils don't go any more rancid now than before COVID. So, you know, nothing has changed in terms of oil.
Okay.
Before that, olive oil was good. So that means olive oil is still good. Grapeseed oil. If going rancid is really a concern, people should put their oil in either 50 to 70 degree humidity in their pantry. Or put them in the dark or green bottle, or worse, put them in the fridge. It might become hard or solidify a little bit, but it's not going to go bad at cold temperatures. And if the oil is hard, you should leave it out maybe an hour, and it'll come back to liquid state, pretty fast. So it's a good way to preserve it.
So we have the oil. So what about, like, I heard, like, people doing meal prepping too. Like, what do you think of that? Like, is there a better recommendation for meal prepping so that, you know, on those days that people don't feel like cooking, like, how should they make their meal preps?
How should people make meal preps for customers, or how people should make meal preps for themselves?
For home, like, you know, for family, or if you're just like a single dude or lady and you're at home and you're just like, I don't feel like cooking, like, what kind of things should they make, or how do you think they should do meal prepping?
If they're not used to cooking and doing dishes and getting their hands dirty, I mean, I would probably stick to one pot dish, casserole, stews, baked-in dishes that has, all the nutrients in it, like lasagna. You have your meat sauce, you have your pasta, the lasagna sheets, and hopefully you have some vegetables in there, aside from tomato sauce. And, you know, some kind of ragu with beans and kale and lemon and those type of things to move away from the meat. And that could be a vegetable ragu. So it doesn't have to be, you know, meatballs, spaghetti, and then sauce to make it a square meal. But you could have everything in the same pot and cook that once for weekdays and eat that 2-3 times and make 2 dishes on their days off, whatever day that could be, and then eat that all week. Much cheaper, and it's much healthier too.
Ah, okay. All right. So what about, like, people, like, that have, like, certain diets or whatever, like the vegans and whatever? Like, is there anything, like, a silver lining kind of like thing that they can like eat or whatever, so they can sustain themselves with the proper nutrition, so they're not like falling out like in their house, and then, you know, and it's not necessarily COVID, it's just they're just not eating right.
They should probably, if they were vegan before COVID, they have their ways to get around eating beans and almonds and alfalfa and flax seeds and blue green algae like spirulina and various kinds of legumes and nuts and grass and seeds that will sustain, like hemp seeds and sesame and flax seeds that will sustain them, you know, with their protein counts and their B12, so that they don't have to change what they were doing before COVID.
Okay. Have you, so there's been a rumor around about like there being like a food shortage. Have you heard anything about this? Any thoughts?
I have. I just happen not to believe in it.
You don't believe in it? What? Why the non-belief?
Well, I've been on the non-profit side for a while, and I've seen the amount of food that the growers, the people that produce food for America, they produce a certain amount in overage. There's a large amount of the food that they produce that's never sold because they refer to it as ugly produce, and most people don't want to buy it. Sometimes it goes to wholesalers and it's sold at a discount, and if you want to buy it by the basket, you could buy it for half the price than you would in the regular store. So for these produce that never see a store or a customer, a lot of it goes to waste and it's dumped right back into the trash or the landfill. So my point is there's no a shortage there. There's an overage of food that, you know, to what they refer to as ugly produce that nobody is using to begin with. So it couldn't possibly be short.
Wait, so with the ugly produce, it's more so just the aesthetic. So it's like, is there like a store? Like, what would you look for, like a wholesale produce kind of place to find that kind of thing? Or because the farmers markets are down, there's no more of that.
I'm sure if you go on Google, like, ugly produce, it's probably going to point you to a place or a warehouse or a location where you could find crates of non-marketable produce, vegetation, or that you could buy at a discount.
Okay. Question, as far as like when people are like going, like say grocery stores and buying like what's kind of like on the shelves, like their rare cuts of meats possibly, like, is there a way that you could recommend that people could, like, make it so they're a lot easier to eat? Because a lot of people are not going to be able to get to, like, the chicken thighs or the chicken breasts in, like, some of the food desert areas in varying places. Like, is there – how would you recommend somebody make that kind of food and make it delicious?
How would I recommend somebody to do what? I'm not sure what the question is.
To, like, take, like, say, like, the rare cuts of, like, meats and stuff that you see on the shelves. Like, is there, like, a silver lining way to make it and make it delicious? Like, do I just throw some salt and pepper and water and just be like, all right, call it a day? Or, like, what can a person do? Like, if they can only get, like, rare cuts of meats or whatever from their butcher because they need to feed their family or they just need to eat.
In terms of the way they prepare the food, they shouldn't have to do anything different than they did before. Now, if they don't have access to it, that's a different issue. They need to maybe plan more or store it more or portion control or do what I call batch cooking. You know, if you're going to make a delicious chicken breast dish, don't make one. Make, I don't know, 2, 3, 5, 12. However many your space or your storage or your freezer area will allow, so that you can enjoy that dish, you know, next week, or weeks later, so you don't have to make it again or go out of your way to shop for that chicken breast to try to make that dish again. So.
Have you heard any, are you doing any pickling by chance or know anything about pickling?
I do know about pickling. I've heard about pickling. It's not my forte.
Okay.
I don't do it that much.
Oh, okay. Do you have like a you wouldn't happen to know like anything like something very simple to do for that? I mean, I know it's not in your wheelhouse, or what have you heard, or is it just as simple as just going to Google, or is there a specific site for that or whatever?
There's a lot of like cooking websites where you could look for really good brines and pickle recipes, and they're dependable. And then when I've had to use it, I've used it before. So yeah, they're there.
So during this time, like we're talking about food and stuff. So during this time, what is your go-to big batch meal that you cook for your family? Because cooking for each individual at home can be a pain. Like, what is your go-to meal, or what would you recommend for the family that everyone can enjoy?
What was the question again?
What is your go-to dish right now during this whole pandemic?
I like eggplant parmesan. You know, eggplant is super cheap. It's spongy, and once you peel it, I slice it 1-inch thick, and then I soak it in seasoned salt for about an hour.
Wow.
Pan dried, dredge it, and then pan fry. And then after that, I lay it in a baking dish with really good homemade or your favorite jar of tomato sauce, and put some parmesan and fresh basil on it. It's really good. You could add some Italian sausage and drain into the base of it, so it's going to give you a really spicy and smoky flavor. But you could have it like as a side too, and it's really, really tasty.
I thought it was just eggplant parmesan. No sausage, just straight up vegetables. And more vegetables with vegetables.
No, it's fine. But what I was saying is, if going back to making like a one-pot meal, and I refer to as baked-in dishes, eggplant parmesan is one of those. Where if you were to add mm-hmm. meat to it, it would become like its own meal.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, cycling back, like you have a lot of extensive experience. Have you thought about taking it to becoming a one of these, I guess, well-known chefs or famed chefs? Have you given it thought to doing that?
I've thought about it, but I don't anymore.
Oh, what is there? Is there a turnoff to it, or
is there what?
Does the thought like turn you off, or is it just like, nope, I won't do it?
It doesn't turn me off. I just decided that at this point, it's not so much that I want to do it or I don't want to do it. I just decided that it's not that important to me for right now.
Oh, what about books or anything?
Like book writing?
Yeah, like a recipe book or just a memoir of sorts.
Book writing? No, I have some a bunch of pretty good recipes, but no, I don't intend to. Unless somebody makes me an offer I can refuse, then yeah, I'll write it. But I'm not going out of my way to write a book, no.
Oh, okay. Is there a time? What was your best experience that you had, like as a chef? Like, what was the best experience, like as far as like when everything, the stars aligned? What was your best experience, like when you were cooking? Or as you're cooking in your career?
So many. I have so
okay.
many. But I'll Let's... tell you of one. I think you'll agree with me. It's pretty good.
Okay.
I cooked for the Dalai Lama in New York City.
What?
The Dalai Lama in New York City. I cooked for him.
Oh, wow. Okay, so what happened? What did you make? How did you even get the gig? Let's start there. How did you get the gig?
I work for this chef called Michel Nichon. I think he's still around. I've seen him doing videos last year.
Mm-hmm.
New York
okay.
City, and for this hotel, which was W Hotel. It was part of a restaurant called Marriott Group. There's this famous actor that backed the Marriott Group. You may have heard the name Robert De Niro.
Uh-oh. Yeah, I've heard of him.
I worked for those guys, and they had the influence to get this guy to come to their hotel on his way as he was coming to New York City, and they've managed to bring a few other fancy chefs there, and somehow they got him to come for dinner, and they made a vegan meal for him, and I was one of those people that helped help, prepare it, make it, cook it, and watch him eat it. And he's vegan, by the way, so at that time it was like one of those new things, quite a few years back, actually.
So wait, did you take part in the planning part of it, or did you just like, the chef was like, we're making this, follow these instructions, and then we're going to plate it, and he's going to put it in his face?
I was a sous chef then at that point, or maybe a cook,
okay.
I don't remember. Probably a sous chef, and they said, we're going to make a vegan meal. They had the whole thing planned out, and we actually executed, me and a few guys executed a vegan meal for the Dalai Lama, and it was fantastic.
Can you recall, like, at all, like, maybe one or two of the dishes and what was so yummy about them?
I remember, like, a white bass with purple potato, which he wouldn't eat it because there was fish in it. So we made, like, a celery broth with potato and barley, and it was just, like, too healthy looking, but he loved it.
I don't know. Is there a such thing as too healthy?
Right.
Does it, like, repel people? I don't know. Chef, is there a, before we, like, get ready to sign off, is there a, do you have a favorite, like, snack food or delight that you don't really tell people about? Like, do you have a favorite, like, sweet or dessert?
A favorite sweet and dessert.
I like rum raisin
rice pudding.
Oh, okay. Is there something that you like, something that you secretly crave that you like just get from the store? You're just like, I'm just gonna grab this and no one's gonna know about it.
I usually end up making it because I don't find it here, or you know, something short of chocolate cake. Yeah. It's something I have to plan for. I have to soak the raisin, you know, a couple of days before I make the rice, and make the rice with condensed milk and cinnamon stick and cook it until it becomes almost mushy. And then when it's cold, then I add the rum raisin inside of it. It's quite delicious.
Hmm. Okay. One more thing I forgot to ask. Gardening. People are gardening at home. Do you have recommendations on what are some key things that people should, like, grow, like, at home? Like, if they're going to do their own, like, kind of gardening or anything?
Yeah. I mean, the staples, herbs, they don't take that much room. Tomatoes are easy to grow, but they could take a lot of room. Peppers, they grow pretty fast. Within 80 to 100 days, you'll have peppers. But it's easier said than done. If you're in a rural area where you have either poor soil or polluted soil, poor sunlight, or a pest problem where you may have rodents or birds and other unfriendlies. I call them unfriendlies.
Unfriendlies?
Unfriendlies, yeah. That come to visit and shall we say, partake of your grocery before you do. that may become an issue because you won't benefit from the work you've put in. Let's just say you're trying to grow tomatoes.
Okay.
They'll take about 100 days, 80 to 100 days to bear a good 4 to 6 ounce tomatoes, shall we say.
Okay.
By the time they get to that size, you're going to have a lot of visitors, so you're going to have to, you know, protect your garden. So by the time you say you want to do a garden to save a so-called money, you'll have to do a better job at protecting the garden than actually growing the garden. So there has to be more in securing the area than the actual produce itself.
Okay, so basically what you're saying is not just like grabbing some seeds and some soil and going for it. You have to actually like encase it, cage it, protect it, and nurture it.
Yeah, nurturing. You have to water it every day. You have to trim it, care for it, right? You have to look out for, and I talked about pests. You have to look for disease. You know, you have like, you know, those black spots. You have white flies. You have mold. You have mildew. You have all those type of things. So if you don't have the time, it's probably not the thing you want to do. But if you do, it's perfectly worth it. I've grown tomatoes and in this very small space in my backyard, and they're very delicious.
And they're your own. You don't have to worry about all the other
They're my own.
Stuff
they come,
GMOs.
They come pre-seasoned. I don't need to put any salt on them. They come, like, seasoned.
That's great. All right, Seth. Is any last words you want to leave for our audience?
Well, if they want a chef to cook empanadas and tamales for them, you should give them my phone number.
Oh, well, you can give it to them now. Tell them how to reach you, like on IG or on phone number or both. What do you want to do?
I'll do it. And here it goes. My number is 626-993-7518. So it's 626-993-7518. For empanadas,
uh-huh.
I'll sell a dozen empanadas for $25. If they want 10,
wow.
It's $20.
And you're
dozen
and
for
what
25,
area are you servicing?
10 for 20. If they're local, like if they're in the valley, I may meet up and deliver them. I make beef, chicken, and veg. The veg have potato and peas and curry in them, and they're spicy.
So wait, so you're the valley, when we talk about the valley, you're in Southern California, primarily the Southern California area and the San Fernando Valley area. That's like Burbank, Simi Valley, Calabasas, Woodland Hills, like those and Thousand Oaks kind of area.
Yeah, Burbank, yes. North Hollywood, that way, yes.
Okay, all right. I just want to make sure you're getting your food hustle on. And you do private chefing too, and you do all the stuff with the PPE and all this stuff, right, with the protection, masks, and all that stuff.
Yeah, and if they want to do tamales, I do tamales, beef, and chicken and pork. I make the chicken with the red sauce. They're $2 a dozen minimum, so $25 for tamales. They're delicious. I make them like a French chef's. You've never seen tamales like this. These people love them.
Okay, what's the turnaround on these amazing tamales?
Turnaround, like how long do they need to order before?
Yes. Uh-huh.
If they want to order them like frozen, and they tell me a couple of days before, 48 hours, I'll make them. Or if they want them fresh, they should tell me, again, 48 hours, and we'll figure out where to meet, and I'll deliver them for them. If they are in the area where then it's not too far from.
Okay, so everything is 48 hours. That's pretty much the lowdown.
Yeah. Beef.
Okay.
Chicken.
And
Molly,
and so
bananas.
Before we go, drop your number and also your Instagram handle. Do you want people to like hit you up, DM you through Instagram so they can see the pictures of your delicious food?
Yeah, if you know how to do that for me, because I don't. But my number is 626-993-7518. We should do email too if you want.
Yeah, but you're a lot of people are using Instagram, but your Instagram, what is it? All four flavor, all number four flavor.
Yeah, that's probably the best way. All four flavor.
Yeah, and it has pictures of the actual food and everything, and it's plated really nicely, I have to say.
Yeah, they could see the, I think they see the empanadas on the pictures.
Yeah. Okay. All
yep.
right, Chef. So thank you for coming on. Maybe we'll have you on again.
Yeah, yeah, my pleasure. I loved it. Hopefully somebody took something positive away from this.
Yeah. Probably we'll come back for a revisit on diets or if there's any updates with, like, restaurants in the near future.
Very well.
All right. So we'll talk soon. And thank you guys for listening. And we'll talk to you soon. Till next time.
Thank you.